You talked to Elroy already.
Oh, right? Yeah.
It's daunting already.
Daunting person. So can you tell us a little bit about the process of adapting, the process of coming at it, et cetera?
Yeah.
Feeling, hoping, all of it.
I came at it as a reader first. I read James Elroy's novel, L.A. Confidential, for pleasure. I'd read half a dozen of his other books. I was not looking for a movie project. I grew up in Los Angeles. I've always wanted to make a picture that deals with the city of my childhood memories. And when I read Elroy's book, L.A. Confidential, I found myself just hooked on the characters. And I found myself having an unusual emotional reaction to them, and also an emotional reaction involvement with them. And the more I thought about them and thought about my feelings toward them, I thought, if I could possibly duplicate this experience for a movie-going audience, I'd have a very special movie, and I would also have a movie that deals with a theme that I'm always attracted to, which is the difference between how things appear and how they really are, how people appear and how they really are. So it started with the book, and I used the clout, if you will, that I had been fortunate enough to earn by having a couple of movies I had done do well commercially to step forward and say, okay, this is the labor of love I want to do. And not only do I want to do it, but I want to do it the way I want to do it and cast it the way I want to cast it. And I teamed up with a screenwriter, Brian Helgeland, and we went at that massive, densely structured, complicated, intricately woven novel that James Elroy had wrought. And I didn't know James at all at the time. And in fact, I didn't want to know him. I felt he had done his work by creating this book that was our inspiration. And now Brian and I had to do ours. And we worked off and on for about a year before we had a draft with which we were comfortable and with which I was prepared to say to the studio, this is the movie that I want to make. At that point, I contacted Elroy, and his first words to me were, my book, your movie. And that impressed me, because he doesn't write novels that are blueprints for movies. You know, that's why they're such richly rewarding reading experiences. That's also why I think L.A. Confidential is the first movie based on one of his big books. And I was thrilled when he reacted the way he did to the script that we sent him, and nothing could please me or my screenwriting partner, Brian Helgeland, more than the fact that James Elroy is singing the praises of the finished movie. And I think that's because Brian and I were determined to try and keep his voice alive, and I think it's also very clear to James and anybody else that writes his stuff that his book was our inspiration.
You changed a lot, though. That was
the challenge, and that was the opportunity that we were excited about, because it was a very different task than one normally has in Hollywood today, where most scripts are developed in a very linear manner. We came at this saying, let's let the characters be our guide, and those characters that we love, if a given scene or a given subplot didn't enhance those key characters, then it became suspect and might have to be to go or be, let us say, reinvented.
So definitely, the screenplay to another you want so much, you want to have it. You'd like to have the scene be seamless in terms of your eyes.
Didn't really think about it in quite that cut and dried away. We were trying to do justice to characters and try and keep Elroy's voice alive. And as I say, his work was what inspired us. So, and we were dealing with characters he invented, and whatever truth there is in the characters as they appear in the movie, it's because we were trying to be true to what got us there in the first place, which was our emotional reaction to those characters when we read the book. But consequently, there are certain scenes in the movie that, you know, much went out of the book, but there are also scenes in the movie that were not in the book. You know, we invented certain scenes. But, again, they were inspired by the characters.
After you just happen to talk about this, you just think, I can't believe we did it. That was unbelievable. And before you start talking about this, you think, how the hell are we going to do this? Because many writers say, I like having written, but not writing. Because that sort of feeling in terms of...
We were excited about it, actually. Because, as I say, it's so different to come at a movie and come at a screenplay thinking only about the characters. And that afforded us the luxury of having, for instance, the first three scenes in the movie have nothing to do with the plot per se. They are there to introduce us to these characters and nothing more, nothing less. And that's exactly the opposite of almost every script one reads. You know, as a director, I read a lot of material, and almost all of it is designed to introduce you to a character in a scene that is conceived to make you like that character. And then you follow that character, usually a man, through a very linear plot. And all the other characters are there to just sort of support that character and the plot. L.A. Confidential is very different. L.A. Confidential is about these three characters. First of all, the three primary characters, played by Russell Crowe, Guy Pearce, and Kevin. What's that, Kevin? Kevin Spacey. Russell Crowe, Guy Pearce, and Kevin Spacey. And they are allowed to be complex characters as they are in the novel. They're not characters you can say, this is a good man, this is a bad man. They each do actions that are reprehensible, but meanwhile they're each struggling with their own inner demons. And then you have these other characters like Lynn Bracken, played by Kim Basinger, Danny DeVito, Sid Hudgens, David Strathairn's Pierce Patchett, James Cromwell's Dudley Smith. These are all rich, complex characters, and you just don't often find that in movies today. Yeah, again, I should say, first of all, as a director, one of the things I enjoy most is working with actors. Another thing I get a great kick out of is casting, because I not only cast as a director, but I try to cast as a moviegoer. And I think, you know, who would I like to see do something as a moviegoer? I avoid thinking about casting when I'm working on a script. I try to just think about the characters, and then when the time comes, I try to find actors who can capture the essence of those characters. Now, in L.A. Confidential, I not only wanted to do the usual thing, which is find the best actors I could for each and every part, but I had this other agenda, if you will, which was, my hope was to find a couple of actors to play those pivotal roles with Bud White and Ed Exley that were unfamiliar with actors with whom the, let us say, international movie-going audience, that audience did not already have a prior emotional history with. The reason being, I wanted the audience to be able to discover these characters as they went along, the way that I did when I read Elroy's novel. You know, as I met each of those guys in the book, I didn't like them one after another. And then as I kept going, I discovered there was more to them than I thought at first. And eventually, as I say, I got very emotionally involved with them, which is like life. You know, we meet people, we make snap judgments about them, we leap to conclusions based on what they look like, their behavior, etc. And then we find out, hey, maybe I was wrong about that, or at the least we find out there's more to it than meets the eye. And with actors that are as gifted as Russell and Guy are, but who also at this particular point in their career are somewhat unknown to the bigger movie-going audience, you have the opportunity to let the audience feel they're discovering those characters.
How did
they
end up focusing on
certain actors? That's total coincidence. Russell I knew from a picture called Rumpelstiltskin, and Guy I did not know at all. It's kind of a Cinderella acting story, actually. I saw Guy on a day when I was seeing an actor every 15 minutes. He walked in the door. I'd never seen him before. I didn't know who he was or what he'd done. He sat down and gave a dynamite reading. And I began to see this could be my Ed Exley. And I eventually worked with him and put him on tape. I didn't tell anybody that he was Australian, in fact, because I'd already been questioned enough about the risk of casting Russell Crowe with Bud White, but I didn't want to go, now here's another one from Down Under. And the decision that I was allowed to make of casting those two guys and setting a start date was just of overwhelming importance in my ability to make the movie that I had in mind. Because it empowered me to follow through with every decision down the line, right to the picking of every song in the movie.
Was there any pressure to cast unknown actors?
Well, again, I was in a situation where I somewhat undercut the pressure by stepping forward and using any credibility I've been fortunate enough to earn by him saying, you know, you can either use that moment to jack up your salary, or you can use it to say, hey, take a chance, let me make the movie I want to make, and let me make it the way I want to make it. And this was very much part of how I wanted to approach this material. Well, you know, you start thinking about what contemporary beauty can pull off the looking like Veronica Lake, and what contemporary beauty has the glamour of the old-time movie stars. Him almost stands alone, really, in that regard. More importantly, I wanted an actress for that part who would understand that Veronica Lake image, the hair over the eye and so forth, that image was both an asset and a trap. And, you know, Kim has always had a very powerful image. It's not all that dissimilar from Veronica Lake. And Kim, the actress, is able to play the truth behind the image. And, you know, what I was not prepared for, quite frankly, was Kim being a victim of image-making myself. I didn't know Kim at all. The little I knew of her, I sort of knew secondhand and through the media. I was not at all prepared for Kim the actress and the way in which she literally placed herself in my hands with this unbelievable trust and courage. I mean, I was flabbergasted then, and I'm flabbergasted now, and the sort of truth of her performance continues to just knock me out.
I really thought the director said to yourself, I mean, you talk about writing a script on day, you know, first few scenes, so on, there's something to do with the characters. And basically what I'm hearing is that you want something different, you want something different, something well written. However, when you go to the other end of Hollywood and you submit scripts and you do that sort of thing, all you hear is, well, first scene, the character's not likable enough. You have five set pieces in the first two acts, takes 10 feet, like this sort of thing. So it seems like people between yourself, between someone like a writer and yourself, are all there to muddy the process and deliver a mediocre product. And then when we get to you, or you, someone like yourself wants something extraordinary. How do you account for that?
Well, the business is a business. They want to make money. And if they perceive, number one, in their opinion, what the audience wants is something that's easy to digest. You know, I think they grossly underestimate the audience, because I think the audience, in fact, likes to think, likes to be engaged, likes to be involved. Number two, though, equally importantly, they know that if they cast a major star in a movie, that, number one, if the movie doesn't work out so well, they still have something to sell it based on. The movie's good, so much better. You know, they can still sell it as a major star vehicle. And they also won't be challenged. People won't say, well, why were you dumb enough to make this movie? because you have, you know, and their answer is, well, geez, we have so-and-so in the party. You know, that's like insurance, if you will. On top of that, and much in the same way, there's this tendency to want to have a concept behind the movie that is easy to understand. It starts even with writers, you know, going in and pitching the project. If they say something and it's quickly communicated, people can go, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. And if it can be quickly communicated by a writer, it can then be quickly communicated by the marketing team. You know, I've made a couple of movies, like Through the Hand That Rocks the Cradle, for instance, and The River Wild, that it's very easy to sum up, let us say, the concept of in one line. Then whether the movie is good or not depends on how it's executed. L.A. Confidential is very difficult to sum up in one line. I mean, I couldn't give you one line right now that sums it up. That's part of what I like about it. And again, that's why I felt I had to sort of seize the opportunity I had to make this picture. Because it would be silly to use whatever clout one has to make what they already want to make.
There's always, sure. Yeah, I've heard it certainly, not a lot, but there's a couple of times I'm trying to train stuff.
Well, I feel great. I mean, Chinatown's a masterpiece. It's one of the key movies of the last, you know, decade. I think it's usually comparisons like that are suspect in my mind. Again, it's trying to sort of pin a label on something and reduce it down. As it happens, as I say, Chinatown's a great movie, so any comparison I take is flattery. But, you know, I think more what people are saying when they draw that comparison, or they compare it to Anatomy of a Murder, I've heard a couple of times, I think what they're saying is it's a dense plot with a script that has great respect with narrative and takes the time to develop multiple characters. And I think more what they're saying is I remember feeling this way when I saw Chinatown, and I wish I felt this way more often. And that's what they're talking about, I think.
What's the most difficult part of the process is writing, that the directing, the editing, the pre-post? What's the part that really helps to get that done?
I'm one of those directors who actually enjoys all of those parts. You know, some people don't. They hate the shooting and love the editing or whatever. But I enjoy it all. So to me, it's all storytelling. You know, I try to tell the story in the script stage. I try to tell it with the camera. I tell it with the actors and everything that they bring to me. I tell it with the music. I mean, music in L.A. Confidential is very much part of the story, both thematically and character-wise. And then finally, in the editing room, you know, to try and improve the storytelling. And I like it all, and I think all of those phases are, you know, vitally important as well.
So now that you have this plot, now that you don't have to make the, you know, the high concept film if you don't want to necessarily,
yeah.
Are you continuing on that path?
That was a moment I felt I might have when I was trying to set this project up. Those moments are very fleeting and very fragile. This picture hasn't opened yet. The degree of clout that I have after this remains to be seen.
Except for books, I mean, because for both of the pictures, it looks like this is like sort of gone off the side of the film, own character in the movie.
Well, that was the goal. I did something sort of unusual. I mean, I did something I had never done before with this picture, which is I assembled a group of still photographs, some of which I'd had for years, some of which I gathered especially for this process, and I mounted each one of them on a piece of poster board. There were 15 of them. And I was then able to sit with each of my collaborators as they came on board and go through these 15 photographs. And they illustrated how L.A. Confidential would look, what the characters would look like, what the eventual actors would look like that were in those parts. And they also illustrated the themes of the movie, actually, the difference between image and reality, illusion and how things really are. And what I discovered was that being this specific, rather than inhibiting my collaborators, it actually freed them up to be more creative because they understood more clearly what I was hoping to accomplish, and they were then able to move forward much more boldly than they had before. And then I gave them my number one directive, which was, let's create the world of LA 1953. Let's be accurate about it in the way that we want to be accurate to create the world unique to LA Confidential. But then let's keep the window dressing of the period in the background. Let's shoot it as though it's a contemporary movie so that the audience can really focus on the characters, on the actors that are telling our story.
This is your labor of love. Any particular attention that opening weekend, or do you have to, in a sense, attach yourself to them because you have so many factors that contribute to how well it goes?
There are so many factors, and I hope that LA Confidential is there kind of for the long haul, that doesn't stand or fall on an opening weekend. You know, I hope it's a picture that will, in a sense, have a life that's built on the reaction that people have to it, rather than the reaction people have to the ad campaign. Because that's really what the opening weekend is about, is who's in the movie and what are the ads like. You know, after that, it's how did I feel about the movie and what do I tell my friends? And, you know, in addition to James Ellroy's book, the other thing that attracted me to making the picture set in L.A. in 1953, and the reason I thought it would be meaningful not only to me, but to that audience that would eventually see it, is that so many things that were starting in Los Angeles at that time, in that period of optimism and economic boom after World War II, are still with us today. Not just the freeways and the whole idea of suburbia, but the birth of modern tabloid journalism as we know it. You know, Danny DeVito's character kind of plays the inventor of that industry, if you will. As he says at the beginning of the movie, radio, television, once you whet the public's appetite for the truth, the sky's the limit. Well, that's where we're living today, and in the LAPD, the way it was remodeled, we in Los Angeles are still living with that, and I think cities all over the country are. And so my hope is that, again, it will not play like a period movie, but that on a scene-by-scene basis, the audience will be able to kind of forget they're watching a period movie and just go with the characters and the scenes.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you,
guys.